I love that it's a good role to do if you're a bit nosy, because you get to work with so many people. And part of my job is to just sort of root around in different parts of the business and uncover opportunities. My old boss actually called it being a truffle hog.
I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women.
For episode 61, we are joined by Jane English, a business director for the publicly owned, but commercially funded, UK broadcasting company Channel 4, also known as C4. Jane graduated with a BA in English from the University of Nottingham and entered the world of advertising, landing a graduate trainee role at industry heavyweight AMV BBDO. Steadily, she progressed her career within the organisation, transitioning first to account manager and then to senior account director before securing the role as business director at C4. Her role is situated within Channel 4's in-house creative team, which is responsible for writing and producing diverse, inclusive and risky campaigns for the organisation's brands and services. Jane has been involved in countless C4 campaigns, from sci-fi drama Humans to the national TV treasure, The Great British Bake Off. She is also co-chair of 4Women, Channel 4's gender equality network, whose focus is to support and empower women within the organisation to define and achieve their own success. In October 2019, 4Women launched the UK media industry's first ever menopause policy. Its aim is to prioritise women's health through schemes such as private spaces where you can control the room temperature, flexible working and paid leave if you're experiencing menopause symptoms. The ultimate objective is to destigmatize a natural change, make it more visible, normalize something that 50% of our workforce will go through at some point. It's rare that a policy evokes a fist pump, but it's truly a move that is long overdue, and is no surprise that C4 were the ones to take up the mantle and to be at the forefront of change. The initiative was applauded far and wide, from The Guardian to The New York Times, promoting how this will benefit not only those experiencing symptoms, but also their colleagues. Jane, I'm so looking forward to learning more about C4's in-house creative team, your role, and all the fabulous work you're doing. Welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's such an honour to be part of this.
Great. So I'm wondering if we can start with you maybe giving us or breaking down the business director role at C4.
So I see my role as being sort of fundamental to helping 4Creative make brilliant work that truly works. So it involves lots of different sort of strands. One is really creative strategy. The other is inspiring creativity within the department itself. Another is managing our processes, making sure everything's working as efficiently as it can be. And another is really just looking after the culture and the people within the department and making sure that everyone's happy and able to create the best work that they can.
So it'd be great if you could tell me what you do to inspire the creatives and keep everyone happy, because, you know, as we know, happy creatives means great work that takes risks and challenges the status quo. So what are kind of some of the schemes or things you put in place to make sure that happens?
On a broad level, it involves things like organising inspiration talks. So recently I organised for an amazing photographer called Giles Dooley to come in and talk to us all about his amazing work photographing the effects of war. And on another front, it's looking at specific campaigns and looking at, okay, what's going to create the best environment for some brilliant ideas for this campaign. An example being, we're working on a campaign for the Paralympics 2020. And to kick that off, I organised a briefing on the Olympic Park with gold medalist Ellie Simmons, which just meant that we all got off to a really great, really creative start. And part of it is just sharing work and encouraging everyone to share work and sort of making sure we celebrate the fails and the work that doesn't make it through as much as the stuff that does, so that everyone feels that they're in a very sort of safe and creative environment.
Oh my God, it sounds amazing.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Can you talk about how your role kind of fits into the wider in-house creative team? You've mentioned that you kind of oversee a lot of remit in terms of making sure the creatives are supported and inspired, but how does it work in terms of when you're working on a campaign?
So 4Creative is made up of lots of different sort of sub-departments. We've got creative teams who write the work, we've got producers who make the work happen, we've got the most incredible project manager who basically keeps the wheels on, and we've got other roles as well. And my role as a business director is really to work with every single sub-department and bring everyone together and make sure that, you know, from the briefing stage, everyone understands what the strategy is, to the creative stage, making sure that everyone's got everything they need, especially the creative teams, to write the best work. Then I'm responsible for really helping them nurture ideas and then championing those ideas throughout the business. So, you know, talking to the marketing team about them, getting them excited about them, talking to the commissioning team about them, and then the production companies about them. And so I feel very responsible for making sure that, you know, the work does get made. And then it's really also just about making sure that once we've launched a campaign, that I'm clear on what the results were and what we could do better next time, and kind of managing the story around that with the different departments within the business as well. So essentially I get to work with everyone.
Yeah,
which,
you sound like the glue.
Which is good fun.
The glue for all the departments. And I mean that in the nicest way, but you get like lots of fingers in lots of pies as well, that you get to see how everyone's working and their processes and making sure they're all connected.
Yeah, exactly. It helps to be a people person. So you have to like just sort of working with people and building relationships and that kind of thing. And luckily everyone is just wonderful at 4Creative, so it's an easy job to do.
Amazing. So I'm wondering if we can maybe rewind a little bit and you could tell us in your own words, kind of your own creative career journey path up until now.
When I was at school, I found it really hard to know what I was going to do, because I remember actually doing a careers test and it told me that I should either be a lawyer or a theatre set designer.
Wow.
And I know, and the problem was really actually that I'm artistic, but I'm also quite analytical, and I couldn't find a job that seemed to marry the two. And then I remember at university going to the careers office and being handed a campaign magazine, so our industry magazine, their graduate edition, and opening it, reading about the jobs that were available and thinking, this is it, you know, it's an industry that's as much about creativity as it is about being commercial. So I just started writing to agencies saying, please can I come and do work experience, end up applying for grad roles, landing role at AMV, and I spent 8 brilliant years there. Had the most amazing role model at the top of the business in the form of Scylla Snowball, and I just worked on lots of household brands. I worked on Bird's Eye. I'm vegetarian, so that was a little bit awkward, but I managed to come to terms with that. I also worked on BT and Mars, and a charity called Kids Company as well. And on the side, I set up AMV's sort of charitable giving department. So we organised everything from huge fundraisers to volunteering work to pro bono work, and that was really brilliant, really liberating, and it gave me the chance to be sort of a bit more, I guess, entrepreneurial in how I approached things. And I was very lucky that AMV supported me in doing that. So I'd really encourage anyone listening, if they're thinking about doing something on the side and sort of something that's a bit extracurricular, definitely do it, because it just adds a new dimension to your working life.
Yeah, for sure. And actually your role now is quite entrepreneurial, especially the networking of pulling everyone together and then also feeding back on campaigns and then thinking about, you know, strategy going forward. And
yeah, definitely. And I'd say that's very true of how we approach campaigns at Channel 4 as well. We're always trying to think about what's a different way of doing this, what's not going to be the expected way of doing this. We did a really lovely campaign for Dairy Girls last year where we started thinking, okay, we just need a poster, but we ended up painting a mural in Derry and then shooting that, and that created so much buzz around it within that local area. We had the cast sending us pictures and saying, oh, I'm so excited that my nan gets to see this when she, you know, when she goes shopping in Derry. And so it's very much part of our approach to making creative work.
And Channel 4 has a history of that, of like doing things beyond the expectations or beyond a general kind of campaign to promote something. So it must be amazing to be part of the team driving that kind of possibility forward.
What was lovely joining is that I felt like I met a bunch of sort of kindred spirits, because everyone has this mindset of let's go the extra mile and let's, you know, going beyond what's needed. And that is what results in really brilliant work that does push boundaries and does sort of defy expectations and gets people talking.
Mm. Amazing. Right. So you also co-chair 4Women, Channel 4's Gender Equality Network. Can you tell us a little bit more about the initiative, its purpose and your role?
So 4Women is a grassroots gender equality network here at Channel 4. It was actually founded by an incredible group of women a few months before I joined, but they invited me to sort of join the ranks when I got here. And so I now co-chair that with two amazing women called Landy and Naveen. And our mission is to empower Channel 4Women to achieve success, whatever that looks like for them. And what that really means in practice is putting on a series of events and initiatives that will inspire women and inform them, and also help them just get together and kind of connect with each other. So examples from last year are, we had a really great panel event on International Women's Day. We had everyone from Jess Phillips, to Cilla Snowball, doing me a favour as my boss, to a female colonel, sort of just inspiring everyone here at the channel. We also organise a series of breakfasts with lots of senior women from the channel, which we're calling Come Dine With Me Breakfast, which is a bit cheesy, but it's all...
Come Dine With Me is brilliant.
We couldn't help it.
And... But Come Dine With Me Breakfast, I like that as well.
Yeah. And the sort of purpose really was to create some role models within the business, because often more junior women here don't get much exposure to women at the top, and those are working really well. And as you mentioned, we launched a menopause policy last year as well, and that was really exciting. And those are just a few of the things we do, but it's all kind of on top of our day jobs, but we all love doing it. So...
And what's your role? Like, are you co-chair, but what does that involve? And I imagine, like you said, on top of your day job, you're doing a lot of organising, contacting people, bringing people together.
So co-chairing involves really overseeing the broad strategy for the network, sort of overseeing the objectives for the year, and then looking at how those are going to be implemented. In practice, actually, it also just means organising quite a lot of things, because we're all really passionate about it. We all don't mind kind of rolling our sleeves up. There's actually a bit of a danger that you can end up doing too much and it ends up becoming all consuming, because we all care about it so much. So sometimes we have to check ourselves and say, okay, you work late tonight, just go home. Yeah. This can wait. But what's really exciting about it is through co-chairing it, we've met some incredible women. We've got an amazing committee of women who help us, you know, organize everything. And also there are just so many women across the business who are interested in different areas of what we do, who often put their hands up and say, you know, I want to talk to you about maternity policy, or I've heard about this woman that you should meet for a panel. And it's all just really exciting, and you can see people getting really passionate about it themselves.
It must be amazing as well for anyone working here, any woman, you know, to be able to know that there's a network that you can tap into, get support within the organization. Because we often hear it's the opposite, that women are, you know, trying to find those networks and support. So, yeah.
Definitely. And I think that's actually why it started in the first place, because there was a group of women who wanted that and couldn't find it. So they decided to make it happen for themselves. So no, absolutely.
Sounds awesome. You just mentioned that last year you guys released the first UK media industry's menopause policy. So how did that come about and what did it cover?
We just realised that we were starting to hear sort of pockets of noise about menopause, you know, just one or two examples of women who had been through it and had a bad experience, and then emailed our committee group and realised that actually this is just a topic that everyone's dying to talk about, and it's affecting a lot of women across the business, and it's something that's actually really harmful if it's not properly supported. So we heard all sorts of stories, from someone who was suffering from recurrent migraines to someone who was prescribed anti-schizophrenia drugs deal with their symptoms, which I hadn't realised was even a thing. To
is
someone...
that a thing? Is that, or was it like a one-off? Or
I'm not sure. Okay. I don't. But it sounds quite, you know.
Full on.
Yeah, and I think because of the stigma around menopause, she hadn't spoken to her manager about it. No one knew what was going on, which was the case for most of the women we spoke to. Someone else was saying that they were struggling every morning. They were having panic attacks on the tube. They were really struggling with that journey in. But again, because of stigma, they weren't raising that as a concern. So we just felt really strongly that we needed to do something about it, and sort of just thought about the best way of approaching it, and worked out that, or felt really strongly that policy needed to exist, and it needed to be really formal, and it needed to demonstrate that the business was behind these women and there to support them. And also it needed to get the attention of line managers, and it needed to, you know, be something that helped educate everyone on what the menopause is and then how to support women going through it as well. So we wrote the policy, and then we had a big awareness event to launch it on World Menopause Day. And we created a series of films to sort of raise awareness of what menopause was and what it felt like to go through it, involving women from the business who'd come forward, and a few men as well, who talked about their experiences of their partners going through it, or people in their teams. And we've created a series of support groups as well, because what we've soon realised was that as soon as we had our first focus group about the policy, as soon as you get women in a room who've wanted to talk about it and have bottled it up for months or years, it's hard to stop them talking. And actually, so we just thought we just need to start, give them a space to talk.
Yeah.
For me, that's just the beginning, because what's really encouraging is, having done it here, it's attracted a lot of interest sort of nationally and in fact globally. It had a lot of press coverage, and we've already spoken to quite a few different companies who are looking to create their own policy. So it feels like we can inspire a bigger change, which is part of our objective for this year, as well as looking more broadly at women's health and what are the other areas that are currently neglected, that, you know, not just necessarily here, that we could make some change around. So, you know, I personally am really interested in looking at everything from periods to fertility to miscarriage. You know, there are so many topics that aren't talked about that really affect women at work.
Definitely. And something that people quieten down, suppress, so they can come and do their job. And then, you know, on the edges and outside that, it makes doing the job even more difficult. So it's definitely so amazing that you guys have created a policy that creates support.
Oh, thank you. And you know, it's easy to do. We actually found that a lot of the detail of the policy is already existed in other policies at Channel 4, but the problem was they'd never been shown through the lens of menopause. So for example, you know, a key part of the policy is the sickness policy that we have here, and making women and line managers aware that it's okay to take time off work if you're suffering from menopausal symptoms. They're just as valid as any other illness. Whereas what we'd been hearing from a lot of women was they were saying, yes, I'm having, for example, migraines, but I don't want to tell my manager that that's happening. That is also connected to ageism and a fear that you might be seen as being, you know, past it or not fit to do your job. You say that you've, you know, you're going through the menopause or the perimenopause. So a big part of what we've been trying to do is just start the conversation about it so that actually there's less stigma attached to it, and also highlight the fact that women at all levels of the business experience it.
And can I ask you, what was the decision to make the policy public, like launch it publicly? Because I mean, it's fantastic that you did, because it just got so much press, as I mentioned, and as you discussed as well. And that is like moving towards a cultural shift for many organizations, especially in the UK. I mean, I don't know abroad, but I think that's an amazing consideration. Why did C4 decide to pop it out into the world?
I think because one of our objectives is to drive a broader change, because it's a common issue across our industry and across many industries. The stats are really frightening. Something like 70% of women say menopausal symptoms negatively affect them at work, and 25% of women say that they have debilitating symptoms. And something like, I think it is, a quarter of women have considered leaving their job because of menopausal symptoms. Those are really frightening stats, and they're really at odds with, you know, things like the drive to get more women to the top and have greater representation at the top of companies. What's the point in putting all of that effort in when you've actually got women who, you know, when they're going through the menopause, they tend to be at a more senior level statistically. If you're then going to potentially lose them because of menopause, it doesn't make any sense not to be talking about it and not to be supporting it. So our first sort of step to making that bigger difference was, well, let's talk about it and inspire others to think about it as well. And when we had a launch event, we invited quite a few production companies along who had already shown an interest in it as a topic.
I love it. I loved it. Especially I loved reading it. I saw it in The Guardian, and it just chimed so loudly with me, because we all know it's there, and either we're going through it, or our parents are going through it, or our friends are going through it, or we will be going through it. So I just love that you've put it on the table. And it's just all of a sudden it feels really topical, which is fantastic. It means that there is a cultural shift happening.
Definitely. And I think if you look at wider culture, you can see that happening. It appeared in Fleabag. When you start looking for it, you start to notice it. And that's really encouraging. And I genuinely do feel like there will be a lot of change on this front this year, and hopefully in the years to come. Although it will take a while for it to, you know, for policies to be adopted everywhere and for people to genuinely take notice of it. Yeah. What's really interesting about starting a conversation here is that a lot of younger women are really engaged in it, I think, because they want to know what's coming, because none of us, I don't know about you, none of us get taught about it at school. Yeah. And a lot of the women who do end up going through it, taken by surprise by it, and actually often their symptoms aren't correctly identified because they themselves don't realise that that's what it is. And they often find other excuses for it, because often those symptoms can sort of creep up quite gradually. And women at a stage of life where they've got kids who are going to uni, or they're caring for elderly parents as well as caring for their kids, so they can quite easily blame tiredness or depression or anything else on those things rather than on the perimenopause, which is that period of time before the actual menopause. So yeah, it's been really eye-opening for us, and great that it's engaged so many people across different sort of ages and stages at Channel 4, and a lot of men as well. Actually, we had one man in the audience of our panel event who afterwards said that he called his wife immediately afterwards and said, I know what's going on, you're going through the menopause. And they were both as surprised as each other, but that had been happening to her. It had been a year of strange symptoms.
I mean, I love that story. It also sounds like a C4 drama.
It does, doesn't it?
It's great. But yeah, I definitely applaud you guys. I think it's amazing what you've done, and I definitely feel, like I said, it's no surprise C4's at the forefront of the change. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen, like I said, this year and for years to come.
Thank you. And something I would love as well is for there to be more representation of menopause when it comes to content, both TV and film and advertising. So I'm hoping that that will start to change as well. We're certainly looking at it here at Channel 4.
Amazing. So I wonder if we can go back to your role as business director here at C4. Is there a typical day for you in your role?
Every day starts in quite a similar way. If I'm having a good day, then I'll get up about 6, 6.30. I'll either go to the gym, possibly, or I will do what I call eating the poisonous frog, which I think came from a Mark Twain quote, which was around, if you eat a poisonous frog at the beginning of the day, the rest of the day is just going to seem so much easier because the worst is behind you. So often I'll think of the thing that is bugging me the most, you know, is there a thorny kind of problem that I haven't quite worked out? Is there something I'm likely to procrastinate on? And I spend half an hour in the morning just figuring it out. And then I go to work, get there about 9:30. And then from that point onwards, every day is genuinely very different, but I'll generally spend half of it in meetings. The other half is spent buzzing around between people in the department and also just getting out and about, meeting other people from different departments and having more informal chats, and also just spending time at my desk getting some work done.
It's a hugely diverse role.
It's a really interesting role though, because of the number of different people I get to work with, the number of different projects I get to work on. I love that I can be in a meeting about Paralympic sport and then I can go into a meeting about, you know, deadpan E4 comedy, and then suddenly I'm talking about the news, and it keeps me really interested. Mm. And what it's really shown me is how important it is to do a job that you're genuinely interested in and you genuinely love and you want to get up for in the morning. There's never a dull day at work. I was looking forward to coming back to work after Christmas.
Wow. How many people can say that? So what skills do you need to be a business director?
So you've got to be very strategic and commercially minded, but also very creative as well, and be able to recognise a great idea and nurture a great idea, because we don't all agree all of the time. So a big part of my job is also being diplomatic and tactful, and also just empathetic to how people are feeling and why they might be feeling as they are.
Two things I want to ask you about those skills. The first one is the commerciality element of your job, because you studied English, and it's not to say that you're not commercially minded, but was that a skill you had to learn, or is that a natural skill that you had?
I would say I'd always been interested in companies and how they grew and how they operated. But you're right, I studied English. I didn't learn much about that in the books that I read. But I'd say I've just generally just stayed interested and curious and read about what was happening. And then also just as and when you work with new clients and new businesses, you learn about them. When I started in an agency, it was about getting really close to the clients and really understanding what was going on their side. And now I'm within Channel 4, I get to see even more of that.
Okay. And then my second question is, you mentioned being diplomatic and having empathy and working with a large team of creatives and the multiple touch points you have across the organization. Empathy must come into play with nearly every interaction. How have you managed to develop and strengthen that muscle? Because it's a skill that's, you know, takes a lot of energy and sensitivity and observation. So was that something that you developed as well over time?
I would actually almost say the opposite, in that I'm quite naturally empathetic, and in some ways it's, when I started my career, it felt like a bit of a weakness almost, because I was perceived by some people as being too nice. I actually remember a creative director saying to me, oh, before you joined the account, I wasn't sure if you should, because I thought you wouldn't be able to handle the tough clients, because I thought you'd just be so sweet and nice and compassionate that you might not really push for our best work when it got tricky. And then he said a year later, actually, no, you helped us make our best work this year. It's because you approach things differently and because you're so empathetic and that you really understand how to approach things, and actually you managed to avoid conflict before it started. But it really made me aware of how actually being nice can be seen as being a weakness. Mm. And it made me realise that it's so important to be true to yourself.
More and more, especially in business, we're seeing empathy as a huge strength. Mm. So it's amazing that you didn't deviate from that. I mean, honestly, Jane, I can't imagine you yelling ever. But it'd be so easy to kind of shut that down, especially when you're a graduate or coming through the ranks. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely become more of a topic as well. Mm. Like, I saw an article just this morning about how kindness is critical to business success. And I think that's a really, really good thing. And I don't think kindness necessarily is always soft. I think sometimes the kind thing to do is recognising what's right for someone or right for a department. Mm. And that can actually be quite a hard-nosed decision sometimes. But actually, or it can mean, you know, challenging the people that you work with and giving them tough targets or you know, stretching them, but you're ultimately doing the best for people. And I think that version of kindness is what I sign up to.
So what advice would you give to someone who's considering a career in business development within a creative agency?
I would advise them to do their homework and really try and get out there and meet as many people from as many pockets of our industry as possible. Account management, which is my sort of discipline, can be really varied depending on where you do it. So, you know, there are big agencies, small agencies, in-house agencies, and the cultures are really different as well. So if you actually just meet people from those places, ask them about where they work and what they do, you'll really get a sense of what's the right place for you. I would also say don't be afraid of, if you don't know someone doing those jobs, to do a bit of LinkedIn stalking, or you'll definitely know someone who knows someone doing those jobs, because people are genuinely just flattered to be asked for a coffee. So it's really unlikely anyone will say no. And at some point in your career, you will be the person who's being asked. So you shouldn't feel bad about asking other people.
It's amazing advice. Mm-hmm. So can I also ask you, what's been one of the biggest challenges you've faced in your career?
One of the biggest challenges for me when I first started working in the industry was not having a huge amount of control over which accounts I was working on. And actually some of those accounts maybe didn't align with my own sort of moral values. You know, I was at one point selling fish fingers. Another point I was selling cat food. I'm vegetarian for ethical reasons. I guess the way I got around it was I worked out what I could care about on those accounts. So often it was either, you know, the people I was working with and sort of giving, you know, my clients and sort of helping them achieve success at work, or the creative opportunity that lay within those accounts. And, you know, knowing that we could create some really great work from the briefs that were coming from them, and understanding the impact those brands were having on people's lives as well. So if you think about pet food, yes, it comes from meat, but equally it's people caring for their pets, and who doesn't care about that? So that was the first challenge I would say I encountered when I started in the industry.
And that is tough, and thinking about your own values and kind of where you draw the line. Yeah,
definitely. It showed me the importance of, you know, finding that sweet spot of working for a brand or a company that does totally align with your values. And I think it can be hard to find that, but I feel like I found that here at Channel 4, and there are definitely other brands that, you know, I'd love to work for as well.
So can I ask you, what do you love about your current role?
I love that it's a good role to do if you're a bit nosy, because you get to work with so many people, and part of my job is to just sort of root around in different parts of the business and uncover opportunities. My old boss actually called it being a truffle hog, which I thought was almost flattering description, but actually it makes sense. So yeah, it's great if you just love learning new things and finding things out. And I just love that it's people focused as well, because everyone is so different and brilliant here. So I feel really lucky to work with them all.
And can I ask you what you do to fuel your creativity? Where do you go? What do you see?
I used to live on Portobello Road, and every Friday morning I'd get up really early when they were still setting up all of the market stalls, and I would just go and basically rifle through all of the stalls before I went to work. And that's still something I do now whenever I need a bit of a creativity boost, because it's almost like going on a treasure hunt. There's something quite childish about it, but it unlocks something in me, and I always feel much more creative after doing it, and I often have ideas while I'm doing it. And I think I'm just inspired by old things as well. Like, there are so many stories waiting to be told in a flea market or an antique market. So that for me is the number one thing I do to unlock creativity. And the other thing is just get outside and go for a run, because I often find that it empties my mind and then an idea will crawl in. So yeah.
I love the notion of an idea crawling.
I know, it just like creeps up on you.
So I used to live a stone's throw from Portobello Road as well. Oh. And so Friday was the day too that I would go, normally to get like amazing vintage clothes that would just be dumped on a trestle table, and you'd have to rifle through that you'd get for like 50p. So yeah, it's changed a lot, I think, in recent years. But yeah,
it has. It's a lot more expensive now. And I think a lot of the designers or the shoppers go down to buy amazing vintage stuff, don't they? And then base their designs on it.
So I'm wondering if you can tell me what you've got coming up in the next few months at C4.
So the biggest campaign that I've got coming up that I'm working on at the moment is for the Paralympics, which is happening in the summer. And there's a bit of pressure on that, because it's, you know, the last two campaigns have been incredible.
Awesome.
So, you know, big shoes to fill, but we've got an amazing team working on it. We've been working on it since last spring. And yeah, it's just a privilege to actually get to work on it, because I still remember where I was when I first saw the 2012 campaign. And I remember thinking, oh, I'd love to work on that in some shape or form one day. So I feel lucky to be working on it. And it's, yeah, there's still a lot of scope for change and improvement when it comes to disability and perceptions around disability. And I feel we've got a real responsibility to do something really positive there. So looking forward to the challenge.
Oh my God, I can't wait to see that. And that's so, I love that trajectory of you seeing the campaign in 2012 and thinking I'd love to work on it. And 8 years later, here you are.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I often find in life and in my career that the things I end up enjoying the most or that fulfill me the most are things that I've thought of years before and that have instinctively felt right. And that's, I guess, a good example of that.
So with that beautiful gem, we're unfortunately coming to the end of the interview. I've so loved chatting to you and learning more about what you do. And you've definitely given me some insight into the role. Like, I had a vague idea of what it involved, but yeah, it's incredible the things that you're juggling. And I love this perspective of having a lot of empathy and bringing people together. And I can definitely see, just talking to you, you probably do that amazingly.
Oh, thank you.
But before you go, I'm wondering if I can ask you two questions that I ask everyone. Mm-hmm. Is there a career or job in the creative industries you know little about? And I could potentially get someone in that role on the podcast and we could break the role down. And secondly, is there someone you would recommend that I invite onto Greater Than 11%?
So I've always been intrigued by comedy writers and sort of the idea of comedy writing rooms as well, and what the dynamic must be in those, and how do they get to great ideas as a collective. And it just sounds like it must be a lot of fun getting paid to just laugh all day, but I'm sure there's also really challenging side to it. Comedy is so hard to get right, and especially when you're trying to do it as a team. So I would be really interested to hear from a comedy writer. And in terms of someone else who could potentially be on your podcast, can I suggest two people?
Yes,
so I couldn't choose between them. One would be a friend of mine called Margot Revol. She's a strategy director at AMV, and she was the driving force behind the Libresse Viva La Vulva work.
Oh, awesome.
She is just incredible in so many ways, and she really inspires me, so I think she would inspire your audience as well. And the second person is someone I used to work with called Jackie Jo Hannon. She's an integrated producer at Adam and Eve, and she founded Equal Lens, which is an initiative around boosting gender equality when it comes to commercial photographers. And she's just fantastic. And again, like, she really inspires me. I love having dinner with her because I come away with so many ideas and thoughts. And they both have amazing accents as well. Margot's French and Jackie Jo is Aussie, and they're lovely to listen to.
Amazing. Oh, they both sound incredible. I'd definitely love to have them on.
Great.
Jane, thank you so much for your time today. I've so loved chatting to you. And yeah, I'm so looking forward to seeing the Paralympics 2020 campaign already.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Honestly, it's just been the biggest pleasure.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases.